Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us on this Wednesday, the 28th of August. We have a full panel, a lot of folks to talk about a lot of issues, and we will get started. We welcome you, of course, to join in on the conversation, panel@wamc.org. It's as simple as that, panel@wamc.org, and you can write us your thoughts, your comments, your concerns, and maybe we'll even read them. Let me introduce everybody to you. Alan Chartok is here, WAMC's very own. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Hello. That's very nice of you. Yes, I'm fine, but my fingers are hurting. I'm working out.
What have you been doing with your fingers?
On the banjo for my for our Saturday night at 8 o'clock at the Guthrie Church. We're honoring the Guthrie Church. The Berkshire Ramblers do it each year. We all get together. Everybody does. It's wonderful. And the money all goes to the Guthrie Church, and we love doing that. So Saturday night at 8 o'clock, and thank you for my opportunity to say that, Joe.
Yes, it's the Guthrie Center in Great Barrington, Massachusetts. The number is 413-528-1955 to find out more information. And you can also go online at GuthrieCenter.org, and the performance is Saturday night. All right.
Hey. I just want to say one more thing. 1955, it's a year not everybody remembers, but I do.
Check. Anybody else remember 1955?
No.
Yeah. I doubt it.
Nope. Okay. Terry Gibson is here. He is with us, and he is a he's a. I just realized I don't have his bio down on my.
Just make something up.
Yeah. Okay. So you're Professor New Paltz.
Yes.
And where else?
RPI.
And RPI.
And I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, well, it's great. Oh, there we go. Look at that. Thank you very much. I say it here and it comes out there. That's great. SUNY New Paltz Communications Professor and former New York State Senator Terry Gibson.
Oh, yes, and there's that, too.
Yes.
Yes.
He doesn't like to admit that.
Yeah, that's right. How long were you in the Senate?
2 years.
Yeah. Probably enough.
Yeah, well, you know.
I mean, I know you wanted longer, but in retrospect, probably enough. Chris Churchill is here, Times Union columnist. Good morning.
Good morning.
Nice to have you here.
Good to be here.
Also, we're very grateful to have Bob Griffin here. He is Dean of the College of Emergency Preparedness, Homeland Security, and Cybersecurity at the University of Albany. Your class is underway. You're all set.
We're off and running. Although a note, when Alan said that his fingers hurt, I thought he was tweeting like the president. That was what
was
the story.
Yeah, that can do it too. Yeah. That can do it too.
That wasn't what Joe had in mind.
Rosemary Armeo is with us, investigative journalist. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm a little bit drunk this morning.
Excellent.
Because, yes, I visited my 97-year-old neighbor who attributes his longevity to a shot of moonshine every morning. So when you visit him in the morning, you imbibe.
This is in the morning. I mean, this is the...
8 o'clock.
What's the address?
Yeah. He's awesome. He's awesome.
You know.
Sounds like a column, Chris.
Yeah, it does, actually. It... you know, feel free when you visit your neighbor to bring it
to
in
bring
for the
in,
rest.
Come, yeah. Yeah, yeah. He's a little bit hard of hearing. That's the only ailment that you notice. So you talk louder as you drink. It all goes together.
He goes, what?
Hey, Tony!
You had a shot? I haven't had my shot. I can't hear you. Give me another one. All right.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Good morning and welcome, everyone. We have a lot to talk about, a lot of stories, and let's start with Brexit. This was the story that led the BBC, and it is on the front page of many newspapers this morning. Boris Johnson, you remember him. He's an interesting sort, and there are... so now he has seek to stifle Brexit opposition. So... a lot of people oppose to what he's doing when it comes to Brexit and leaving a hard Brexit exit as of October 31st, otherwise known as Halloween. Now, he said what he's calling for is a parliamentary delay. So normally in times of crisis, British leaders convene parliament. But as the country confronts its biggest decision in many decades, Prime Minister Boris Johnson seems to be intent on doing the opposite. On Wednesday, today, he announced plans that would shorten the time parliament has to debate Brexit, potentially increasing the likelihood of a no-deal Brexit. The move elicited furious cries of outrage from opposition politicians who denounced it as undemocratic and possibly unconstitutional. And it set the stage for a heated showdown with Parliament next week when it returns for summer recess and possibly again in October as the Halloween deadline for Brexit bears down. The Speaker of the House of Commons, John Bercow, called Mr. Johnson's decision a constitutional outrage. Jeremy Corbyn, the leader of the opposition Labour Party, denounced it as reckless, while the party's finance policy spokesman, John McDonnell, called it a very British coup. Well, there you go. they've all lined up behind the prime minister.
I have no idea what is happening in England. Am I the only one?
How do you mean?
What are they maneuvering towards? What is Boris Johnson after here? He's going to crash out of the European Union. To what end? Why is that a goal for him at all?
I think it's a representative of extreme nationalism. I mean, this is the whole Nigel Farage movement, the whole effort that, you know, Britain first, and being part of the union is seen as being beholden to lawmakers in other countries. And I think it's a continuation of a lot of what we're seeing in our own country about America first.
I don't understand America right now either.
I did get a kick out of the part where everyone said, you can't do this, you can't do this, you can't do this. And he said, okay, well, I'm going to ask the Queen. And so he's now going to drag her into it. And she must approve the suspension.
But that's
of
the key,
Parliament.
Joe. The Queen has to approve this. And there's a... doing just a little bit of research before I got here, that there's a similar situation in the early 80s.
Good for you.
Isn't that against the rules? I thought we weren't allowed to do that.
That's code for I was actually reading the paper. What can I say?
You're still ahead.
Research.
Yeah, you're making me feel bad now. You're shaming me. the situation that was interesting is in the early 80s, there was an effort to dissolve Parliament, and I'm not sure the term dissolve Parliament is the correct terminology, but to suspend Parliament in Spain, and the King wouldn't sign off on it. And there's a hope that the Queen will actually step up and say that no, that this is a threat to the democracy and won't sign off on Boris Johnson's request.
It's
kind of ironic that it takes the Queen to say something's a threat to democracy.
Yeah, the head of a monarchy. This doesn't sound right. Yeah. I don't want you people like, what are you ruling?
I decree that this will not happen. It is a threat to democracy.
Well, good point.
I keep thinking about how Donald Trump must be looking at this and going, wow, that's a great idea. How can I go about suspending Congress? Can I do that?
Do we have a queen?
There ought to be a way to do that.
Who's
going to
do that?
Yeah, I just...
isn't he doing that already?
Ivanka, you're the queen.
You know. Yeah.
It does seem counterintuitive. I mean, I understand the political motive. If you don't want a lot of trouble, then you just, you know, not have the meeting that would cause the trouble. But Parliament is scheduled to meet the first 2 weeks of September. Then this would suspend for the annual political party conferences and then scheduled to reconvene around October 9th. So you're basically taking out 3 weeks of when this would be discussed, which I think we can all agree would time is going to move very fast before you get to October 31st. And this is a major decision. And that discussion time could, if this goes through, be...
You know, and it's so bizarre. We're all kind of chuckling over things today. But the economic impact of this for the past, since 2016, the past 3 years, has been enormous on England and on Western civilization. And it's just going to get worse. I can't believe how cavalierly England and the U.S. is doing some similar things. It's just throwing away the advantages it had in trade and in economic might.
Well, if you look at this from just a practical political point of view, not that I'm a supporter of Boris Johnson, but if he's serious about actually leaving the European Union, And if we look at what Theresa May just went through, which she tried to do a very traditional route of doing this in a traditional negotiating way with Parliament, that didn't work. So if he's serious about this, he does need to do something that's radical, something that is different, something that is completely breaking, you know, all precedent. And this would appear to be that move.
Breaking precedent, but also legal experts say that the move appeared to fall within the bounds of Britain's unwritten constitution. But many saw it as a step on the path to a full-blown constitutional crisis as the fight over Brexit grinds on. So,
yeah, and I think what bothers me about this is this tendency that we're starting to see around the world, and it's not just here, and it's not just in Britain. You're starting to see it in India and other places, is that when a leader gets in the position and into a leadership position, they don't like what the opposition is saying. And instead of dealing with that and working out compromise, what they're doing is that they're demonizing, or in the case of Britain, looking to just stop all conversation altogether. And I think it doesn't serve the people well to not have a continued robust conversation about something that is of historic significance to that country and, frankly, to the world. If you really think about our alliance with the United Kingdom, our dependence upon our European partners and what this means.
But to be
the thing that's so interesting about this is that we know that our president, right, has promised once this thing happens, he's going to be right there doing good things with the British. Now, that's interesting because he never tells the truth. So why should anybody depend on that?
Well, the similarities between Boris Johnson and Donald Trump, and it's certainly how they're handling the situation, are kind of terrifying, really. I mean, they're both interested in these power grabs that just allow them to control the message and to find ways to completely go around any type of democratic procedures that are in place.
There also is the cynical look at this, which is they've been discussing this for, what, 3 years, 2 years?
Right.
And nothing has been able to accomplish. So even if you had another week, what would be accomplished? And I know that goes against the – I understand all of the arguments that have just been mentioned. But if everything goes through and they get their way and the Queen says no and they go in the back, what will be accomplished in that time?
You're probably right. Probably nothing. I mean, they are at a bit of a stalemate. There is no agreement on how to proceed with this, and Boris Johnson has decided he's going to go ahead with it full speed ahead, which is, you know, in a sense, why he's there.
What in the world makes anybody think the Queen's going to say again? No? What in the world makes anybody think that the Queen is going to say no? I mean, this really flies in the face of everything that the British have established over the years about the parameters of power for the royalty, Queen.
You know, but maybe that's the reason that she would take a different approach to this. And she has traditionally taken a very hands-off approach, in fact, has moved the monarchy well out of the political sphere. But this is a situation, again, that I agree with is unprecedented in British politics. I mean, maybe if you go way, 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 way back, you know, I'm talking to like the 1600s, there may be some comparisons. But this is a new space, and that may cause enough concern for her about the good of the government and the good of the country that she does act differently. That's the only thing that I could, you know, it's the only reason I would say that she would change her modus operandi.
Who do Alan. Who do you think she's taking advice from? Who is she listening to right now about what she should do?
Well, she's a conservative woman. There's no question about that. But I don't think it's the I would take some issue with the idea that it's up to the Queen here. I think this is up to the Parliament, and this is up to because, you know, Magna Carta and on up, royalty has been told, keep your hands off. I don't think she gets to make the decision.
Well, there is a theory here that one of the reasons that he's doing this is to try to force the EU into coming to the negotiating table and making a deal with the UK so that they can exit Brexit, so they could do the Brexit with a deal, which is what they would prefer to do, and this would force that conversation. So there is that theory as well.
But even that, though, if you're Germany and France, and you're already looking at economic difficulties in your own countries, why would this force you to the table? I mean, why would you be bullied by the UK? And again, I, and the other element of this whole discussion that I think is is, you know, personally concerning to me is what happens with Ireland and North Ireland.
Right.
Sure.
You know, that's the one that really scares me just because, you know, having family over there.
Well, the general thought, I believe, is that the EU would prefer that the UK stay in the EU because there are great economic benefits to that happening. So they would prefer not to lose them. So and so far, they have allowed this to kind of roll and drag out, not making a deal, but also not just closing the door either. So who knows what's going to happen?
In a video interview on Wednesday morning, Mr. Johnson said he has made the decision in order to progress with, quote, our plans to take this country forward and to get on with our domestic agenda. To do that, we need legislation. We've got to be bringing forward new and important bills, and that's why we're going to have a Queen's speech, and we're going to do it on October 14th. We've got to move ahead now with a new legislative program.
Now, when the Queen speaks, she doesn't write those things. They write it for her.
That is correct. That is correct, but I think she does have some influence over it. The other element to this that I don't think we can ignore is that, you know, Johnson's doing this not because he doesn't know what legislation he wants to write. He's trying to take the heat off of the opposition, not give them a platform that they can generate the type of protests that would scare his, you know, if you think about his majority, it's so slim that, you know, a couple million folks in the streets of London will have a significant impact on his ability to remain as prime minister. It's a mess.
I mean, it is a mess. And it starts off with what you were saying, Rosemary.
I don't
trying
get
to
what's
understand
happening.
It.
It's,
I mean,
if Boris Johnson is kicked out, okay, what does that mean? The parliament's dissolving. There's no agreement about a prime minister. There's even division about staying in or going out, or honoring the referendum or not. It really is. It's the only country in the world right now that makes America look like we're like, oh, really, together.
not only
I don't know about that.
Yeah, okay, maybe Somalia. Okay, I'll grant you that.
There might be a few others.
Not only don't you understand Ethiopia. It, Rosemary. Not only don't you understand it, Rosemary, but they don't either.
Yeah.
I mean, they are in a mess. They can't figure it out.
David Cameron's fault.
The thing that, or no.
The voters voted for it, too. You know, I mean.
But not by much.
No, not by much. But when you talk about whether, you know, what Boris Johnson is doing is democratic or undemocratic, I think that is something you have to remember. The people voted for the decision
Cameron
that he's trying to execute.
Cameron didn't have to make that vote.
No.
It's his fault. Why did he have to have a vote on this?
He didn't. But even still, the people voted for it.
Well, you know, at the end of the day, what this is all about is just flat-out denial that we actually live in a globally connected economic world. We're all connected, and it's never going to go back to the way it was.
Right. Yeah,
and so
right.
Countries that are trying to isolate themselves, like the United States, like the UK, are inevitably going to hit this chaos because
that's
it's
smart.
Just going against what's actually happening in the world.
All right, we're out of time for this break, but we'll have more time on the other side of the break, and we'll come back for that in just a moment. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. We will continue our conversation right after this. Good morning, and welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us on this Wednesday. We have some letters regarding Brexit, and then we will move on to other things. Jim says, is this what Russia wanted? It's a mess in the U.S., it's a mess in the U.K., and a mess with the rest, with this and the rest of Europe. Isn't this by Russian design? Why aren't we talking about that?
You know, I think you're spot on, but I would also say that I would imagine that Russia is jumping up and down saying, we never imagined it could be this successful.
Right.
I mean, that they have significantly destabilized both the United States, the UK, and the European Union in the course of a two-year period.
We got this from Julius, who says Trump may not have his minions looking into suspending Congress, but I'll bet he's looking into ways of suspending the 2020 elections. Then Maggie writes, England versus UK. I'm enjoying the discussion about the latest Brexit insanity, but could wish that Rosemary would not refer to the country as England. since it is the entire UK which is affected by the craziness. As a Scot, I especially feel that the inclusion of Scotland, Northern Ireland, and Wales is important since Scotland and Northern Ireland voted to stay within the EU.
All of this is moot, of course, because of the Brexit discussion. We'll see. Talk to me next year.
Although, you know, it does raise interesting questions about what happens with Scottish independence.
Yep.
And certainly we talked a little bit about Ireland and North Ireland and the border. I think it has significant ramifications for the Union.
All right, let's move on to other topics and talk about other things this morning. We go to, well, so the, remember Deutsche Bank? Remember them? So Trump's bank has tax records that Congress is seeking in subpoenas targeting the president's finances. President Trump's biggest lender has in its possession tax records that Congress is seeking in targeting the president's financial dealings. The bank told this to a federal appeals court in New York yesterday. The disclosure from Deutsche Bank came in response to a court order as part of a legal battle between Congress and the president over access to Trump's business records. The bank's public redacted response filed Tuesday did not identify by name whose records it has. The revelation provides new details about the pool of possible documents Congress could eventually obtain. The House Financial Services and Intelligence Committees have subpoenaed the banks for years of financial documents from the president, his three eldest children, and the president's company. Based on Deutsche Bank's current knowledge and the results of the extensive searches that they have already conducted, the bank has in its possession tax returns in either draft or as filed form responsive to the subpoenas, according to the bank's lawyers in the U.S. Court of Appeals in New York for the Second Circuit.
So I looked up Deutsche Bank's biggest scandals, which, believe it or not, when you Google it, there are a number of articles on this. And let me read you just the five biggest Deutsche Bank scandals, which just the fact that you have a top five is disturbing. One was the laundering of Russian money in 2017, which totaled over $630 million. The second is the LIBOR interest rate scam that went on from 2003 to 2007. The third is a violation of U.S. economic sanctions. The fourth is sale of toxic securities leading up to the financial crisis. And then the fifth is a spying on its critics. And this is the main bank for our president and his family.
Well, again, so with the research.
So what are you implying? Do you think Deutsche Bank may be playing the system?
I think that we're dealing with an institution that has a history of significant violations and ethical lapses.
Well, one of the
guess what? I agree with you.
One of the reasons Deutsche Bank is his bank is because he had so much trouble getting loans from anybody else because he had defaulted on them. I mean, there is even internal debate within Deutsche Bank about whether they should be dealing with the Trump empire.
Whether he is ethical enough to deal with Deutsche Bank.
Right. I mean, you know, yeah.
And by the way, he's turned on them several times, on the Deutsche Bank. So, you know, who knows what game is being played here?
The Organized Crime and Corruption Reporting Project that I work for named Deutsche Bank as the outstanding corruption player of the year last year.
Exactly.
So that's already standard. I think the story was significant in the afternoon when the New York Times, who's been on the story, who broke all of these things that we're researching, said they have the records. That was significant because it looks like Congress can get them. But I think Lawrence O'Donnell of MSNBC roiled the story last night when he reported using only a single source. I don't think it's reliable based on a single source that the records that they have show that Trump's co-signers were Russian oligarchs. And that, of course, is a smoking gun, if true. But that if true, that's you don't report it if you don't know it.
Yeah, that's a massive if
it
true.
It is horrible. Yeah, I think journalists are on the line from that. If that proves not to be true, then Trump is going to be yelling fake news and he'll have like a lot to stand on it. It endangers all the reporting on this.
Well, if it's not true, just show us your taxes and we wouldn't have an issue. I mean, this gets back to the
Doesn't
reason
work
why
that way, though.
Well, I mean, it does. You can't have it both ways about, you know, complaining about how badly he's being treated when we're speculating about something that, that I really feel like that he should have shown to the people when he was running for the
No,
office.
You have the right as an American citizen not to show your taxes. And if he can say, look, why should I give it to this guy who, look at what he's reporting, it's fake. If fake, this story is a disaster for reporting on Trump.
But wait, are you defending Donald
no,
Trump?
No, I'm not. I'm
it
criticizing.
Sounded like you
I'm
were.
Criticizing MSNBC.
Okay.
Let me be clear.
Okay.
Yeah, I have trouble believing that if that story is going to be broken, it's going to be broken by Lawrence O'Donnell.
Exactly. I don't trust him. He's very anti-Trump, and that makes him suspect. And it's been – he did this last night. There's been nothing picking up, nobody else. And the New York Times, which is totally on top of that story, has had nothing since. I'm really worried
Even if
it.
He had released his taxes, I don't think that loans co-signed or – co-signed by Russian oligarchs would have been part of that whole package. I mean, there's only so much that's shown in your taxes, and I'm skeptical.
But there are lots of documents that were subpoenaed through various congressional committees where they're
right.
doing an investigation.
And that's beyond his tax returns.
Which is beyond, yeah, they're asking for more documents than just the
right.
tax
that's
returns.
That's way beyond
so
tax
it is
returns.
Very possible that right. those types of documents could be in that.
You know, Rosemary, I'm very naive, I will admit, but I also think that anybody who's going to be president of the United States has got to be held to a higher standard than the rest of us. And I think that's part of the, you know, the part of the process of becoming president is that you're willing to open yourself up so that we know exactly what the limitations are or what any issues are, because you become the embodiment of this country.
Okay, that's politics 101, no disagreement. I'm talking about journalism 101. You do not go out on a national story, an international story, based on one source. Even if it's Trump himself talking to him, it's still, I mean, that would be the only source I could think of that would be absolute. Or the president of Deutsche Bank. If he has those guys talking to him, maybe. But it's so dangerous. Do you let any student of yours turn in a story that has one source?
Well, I agree with you, and I understand your concern and even your outrage, but this has been going on cable news for I don't know how you stop that. Of this, it's everybody trying to top everybody else, even within their own network.
Well, it plays into the president's hands, though.
That's,
of course,
I mean,
it
that's
does. No, I agree, but I don't know how you stop it.
We are in really dangerous times.
When I mean,
they're looking, they're investigating reporters to say, if you're not pure, what are you doing? You know, casting stones at our president, and this is just plays totally into that hands.
I mean,
but one last thing, and that is that this president is a genius at taking what has always been a norm, you release your tax return, and changing it. And you're right, Rosemary, he doesn't have to. But that is across the boards. And now you see the emoluments clause.
Yes.
You see the Attorney General of the United States booking rooms in the Trump Hotel.
That's nuts.
Talk about protecting the Constitution. Unbelievable.
But he's arguing that he spent his own money just to...
Yeah, well, that's what they say. And when one has to wonder about what is one's own money and where they got their own money from.
Well, they just continue to press their ability to break every single norm, because there seems to be nothing or no person that's willing to step up and stop them.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
they never hit a
roadblock, so they just keep going.
I mean, it's ultimately the voters, right? I mean, I agree with what Robert said about, you know, we should hold presidents to higher standards, but it's the voters who have to do that. And if someone doesn't release their tax returns and still wins primaries and still wins a general election, I mean, what do you suppose? I don't really know what you do about it.
But
if it's not important
to
voters, then it's not important in a sense.
But beyond, yes, I agree. It is ultimately the voters. But the voters do elect people that are actually supposed to uphold the Constitution and hold other elected officials and the government accountable and to a higher standard. So I think you can also argue that there are people in office now, both in the Democratic and Republican side, that are derelict in their duty to hold this president and his administration accountable.
Well, I wouldn't disagree with that.
Yes, except, well, yes, I'm with you. But yes. We know what's happened here, and that is that the Republican group has not moved off the dime, right? So you can say it's the derelict and this and that, but they are. They are what they are.
All right, let's hold there. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll have letters. We'll have more stories, and we'll talk about other stuff. Alan Chartok, Terry Gibson, Chris Churchill, Bob Griffin, and Rosemary Armeo make up the panel this morning. We'll be back right after this. Like we're coming back from the land of make-believe with that music. A little xylophone.
Here comes the trolley.
A little trolley coming through, and here we are. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning, 47 minutes past 9 o'clock. So let us talk about, the wall. Let's talk about the wall. President Trump wants a border wall. He wants it black, and he wants it by Election Day. He's so eager to complete hundreds of miles of border fence ahead of the 2020 presidential election, according to the Washington Post, that he has directed aides to fast-track billions of dollars worth of construction contracts, aggressively seize private land, and disregard environmental rules, according to current and former officials involved with the project. He's also told worried subordinates, and this is key, that he will pardon them of any potential wrongdoing should they have to break laws to get the barriers built quickly, according to those officials. Trump has repeatedly promised to complete 500 miles of fencing by the time voters go to the polls in November 2020, stirring chants of finish the wall at his political rallies as he pushes for tighter border controls. But the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers has completed just about 60 miles of quote-unquote replacement barrier during the first 2.5 years of Trump's presidency, all of it in areas that previously had border infrastructure already in place. The president has told senior aides that a failure to deliver on the signature promise of his 2016 campaign would be a letdown to his supporters and an embarrassing defeat. With Election Day 14 months away and hundreds of miles of fencing plans still in blueprint form, Trump has held regular White House meetings for progress updates and to hasten the pace, according to several people involved with those discussions.
Well, one of the problems with this whole pardon idea is that any indictments that might come out of any law-breaking that happens in this process between now and the election probably wouldn't even begin to unfold until after the election. So it would be difficult for him to pardon them if he's no longer president. That's problem number one, which is certainly a problem I hope that we have to deal with.
He's probably not looking at it that way.
I'm sure he's not.
The people who are being asked to break the law might want to look at it that way. I don't know.
Yeah.
I frequently quote Sigmund Freud. Whether he actually said it or not, I don't know. But there's a famous quote, which is, there is no joke. So when he always says, I was just joking, you think about that for a second. There is no joke. Because every time he says something, and it turns out to be terrible for him, he says it's a joke.
Alan, I think, and that's the trend that I certainly see more and more, is that he makes really horrible comments. There's pushback, and then all of a sudden, the rest of us don't have a sense of humor, and it's becoming a really disturbing trend, because it shows you how little he's thinking, and frankly, it's showing you how little his handlers are working with him. And this is why our policies are all screwed up. This is why our allies don't know if they can depend on us. Joe, you talked about the fence. The only thing you left out, in addition to it, the being painted matte black, is that he wanted spikes on the top, because, who wouldn't want a picture of somebody trying to get into the United States for a better life being impaled upon on a
being
huge
gored.
Nothing says land of the spike. Free like that.
Like a big black fence with spikes on it?
Yeah.
Alan, you spoke about this earlier today, but one of the worst parts of this to me is that he's diverting money from FEMA and emergency preparedness at a time when Puerto Rico still hasn't gotten money to fully recover from Maria and is about to be hit by yet another hurricane. This
and week. Which he lied about. Lied about how much he put into that.
He lied? Shocking.
And if you look at
and we laugh about it. That's 12,000 lies during his administration. And I can't even recount them. It's so funny to hear about things he did 2 years ago that I thought was outrageous at the time. And now it seems kind of tame compared to this new stuff.
One of the things in this story that bothers me, having worked in both local government and state government, and knowing what contractors and builders and real estate people have to go through in terms of getting permits, getting approval to build things, all the various environmental laws that are in place. This president is just throwing all of that out the door, saying, I'm the king, I can do whatever I want, no laws apply to me. And the model that he is setting for the rest of the country, for all of the other state and local governments and all the other processes that have been in place for many, many, many years that have helped us build the country as we know it, are really being sacrificed. And it's just a horrible way to go about leading your country. It's a terrible role model.
And his reason for doing this, which is accepted by many people, is to make us safe. And we do not have an issue on the southern border that matches the danger that's coming from Russia. And that guy, he's Putin, he's welcoming in the front door.
And he's micromanaging. What's interesting is he really is seriously interested in micromanaging the paint color, the points on the fence, exactly what the fence looks like. I mean, if he would only get as serious about micromanaging all the other issues we actually have in the country that matter, you know, he could actually maybe accomplish something.
Well, I think intellectually that's all he can get his arms around, is figuring out what color it is and how big a point it has on it. There's a couple of additional points here. One is that for folks that don't understand it, the disaster relief fund is a pot of money that is supposed to be available to deal
right.
with natural disasters or other disasters. And if you look at the track of Dorian right now, I mean, it's supposed to be hitting the Florida coast potentially this weekend. You know, we're in the heart of hurricane season. So the idea of taking money out of a fund that has been systematically robbed by Congress over the years to begin with, in order to act as a piggy bank is really problematic. You know, the second issue, and if you do support the president and the administration, and you think it's cute the way he operates, my question to you is this: what happens when a new administration comes in and decides that they can do the exact same thing that he does,
well, that's a
and
good point.
Invalidate yeah. all of the things that you think are important? I mean, this is a bad trend.
I mean, conservatives have always cared about things like property rights,
and takings,
and due
yeah.
process, and mm-hmm. and you know, you're talking about taking people's land illegally to build something as quickly as possible, right? I mean, these things, eminent domain takes a long time, and it takes a long time for a reason.
Yes.
I know a lot of people in government do get frustrated at how long it takes, but it's there for a reason. This is people's land. This is people's livelihood in some cases, and you just don't take it, you know? I mean, that's just a fundamental right of people to have their land and to... I'm just babbling here, but
I absolutely agree.
Yeah,
no, you're spot on. I mean, the idea that government doesn't have the right to take your property,
right.
that there has to be a
without a process,
there has to be recourse. But even if you look at the Supreme Court rulings on it, you know, they've made it harder and harder and harder to make sure that the government has got to live to a higher standards, mm-hmm. Because it is such an inalienable right to control your own property, and it's so cavalier. I mean, could you imagine if Florida went in and said, well, you know, we're going to put a drainage ditch down the middle of Mar-a-Lago? I mean, he'd lose his frickin' mind.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay, but it's okay for him to go take it because, you know, because
National
his
security.
His campaign promise, and he's looking at these poll numbers and saying, I got to do something to make sure that I bolster my base.
It echoes right. back to the way he developed his properties. I mean, he did use eminent domain, or tried to get government officials to use eminent domain improperly to build his projects. And it's almost as if he's seeing this as just another one of his projects. You know?
Well, but, you know, he does come from a state, that being New York, which is famous for using eminent domain. I mean, he's had a lot of people to look up to, like Robert Moses, for instance, who used eminent domain in ways that are almost unimaginable to any other state. I mean, the things that we built in this state by taking other people's property are phenomenal. So he had a lot of people to look to and learn these lessons.
Yeah, and if for those of you that have not read Caro's book Power Broker on Robert Moses, you really should, because it is a blueprint about abuse of governmental power and authority. In the vein of, and I'm doing air quotes for the people that can't see me at home, in the vein of common good.
Mm-hmm. Well, the only thing is, sooner or later, people can catch up with people like that. They caught up with Moses, and this one I'm doing just for Rosemary. The first one, of course, was in Central Park, and Moses lost there. And the second one, Rosemary, was trying to put a road down the middle of Fire Island.
Oh, how horrible. I hope that was stopped.
I mean, they stopped Robert Moses eventually, but not before he was able to do a tremendous amount of damage to almost every city in the state.
Well, you're right about that.
Well, damage is, you know, his projects are have, and they are debatable, but it's nothing like a wall, which no one, I mean, has anyone really think that it will work? Even advocates of a strong security and who actually do think caravans are attacking us, no one is saying the wall would work. The projects that you're talking about with Moses at least did contribute to the public.
Well, as Joe said, a lot of this is just replacement fencing anyways. You're taking down one fence and putting up one that's scarier looking.
Taking away money from an agency that needs it. I love that the response from FEMA was, we think barring an emergency that we have enough money even when we lose this, even when we send this money over to the wall. And you have Dorian that's about to hit Puerto Rico, which is going to get slammed again.
Well, one of the things that Robert Moses did do, however, that is similar to a wall is that he did put massive highways right down the middle of what were thriving communities and separated them and essentially ended the existence of those communities.
And refused to leave room for public transportation.
And that's the problem. Anytime you take land, especially land that is being used within a context of a community, and put divisions within it, you are creating issues that are possibly detrimental to that community.
And if government can get away with by just executive fiat of the president by taking, then what does that mean for our future?
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll let that very big question hang, and we'll take a break. When we come back, we will continue. We'll have letters. We will talk more about these topics and new ones as well. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. 6 minutes past 10 o'clock. Alan Shartok is here, Terry Gibson, Chris Churchill, Bob Griffin, and Rosemary Armeo. We have letters. We'll start with those. Mike in Kingston says, I agree with Rosemary about the need for journalists and journalism being credible and following protocol, but why does it seem that the left publications are held to a higher standard than the right-leaning ones? Fox News had a man on 6 or 7 times that claimed to be a Navy SEAL and was not, and no one blinks. I understand and totally agree with the argument of credibility and accountability, but it should be across the board.
Well, that's true. But I think we've lost. People who care about journalism already know that the right-wing publications are not credible. So they have especially high hopes for the New York Times and the Washington Post, and cable should be part of that, and CNN. Yeah, I think there are higher demands on left media.
We got
you
this.
Don't. You
I don't know about that.
Oh, okay.
Well, yeah. Go ahead.
No, I mean I don't. I just don't know that they're being. That's a tough question. I mean, yes, I heard. Was it Monday? You guys were talking about this new group supposedly that's going to be looking into the tweets and stuff.
Yeah, checking out of the background of people who write negative things on the president.
I mean, there have been left-leaning groups that have been doing that same thing to right-leaning journalists for a long time. I mean, I don't understand how that group is any different than what Media Matters does, or, you know, I mean, we're getting a little bit off topic, but it's just that seems strange to me that people are worried about this group when they don't worry about similar groups on the left doing the exact same thing.
I think they do worry about that. Well, Media Matter doesn't – I mean, the aim of this new group of Trump – this sounds, I'm sorry, more like the media program than the roundtable. But the Trump group is aiming directly for journalists who they don't like, who criticize.
And
Media Matter looks overall at
No,
stories.
Media Matters went right after anybody who reported critically on Hillary Clinton. So, I mean, you have one group on the left, you're going to get the same thing on the right, is my only point. And, I mean, I think there's plenty of criticism of Fox News, and a lot of it is valid. You know, I don't think that people are giving right-leaning journalists a pass that left-leaning journalists aren't getting.
Let me just say, as an intervener here, and I think Rosemary's points about credibility are very good, but there's a whole bunch of new polls this morning which show that Monmouth poll, which came out the other day, which person in the progressive community was touting, was completely wrong. In other words, Quinnipiac and everybody else are saying that the Biden lead has been sustained and maybe even gotten higher. So you really can't believe everything you see, right?
But is that fake, or is that a result of the sampling and the questions that they asked?
You mean the Monmouth poll?
Yeah.
Well,
you should never trust one poll. I mean, you have to look at the trends. But the Monmouth polls generally survey likely voters, whereas most other polls survey registered voters. And that's why sometimes Trump in Monmouth polls shows up as more popular than he does in some of the other polls. So but my point is they're surveying a different group of people, and that's sometimes why their polls are different than others.
By the way, Chris, I have to tell you, there are many pollsters who will tell you that they survey likely voters.
That's just not true. Yeah. Most of them at this time, they survey registered voters at this. I'm looking at the Real Clear Politics, and it's registered voter, and then the Monmouth poll stands out as one of the only ones that does likely voters.
Well, I have big problems with this Monmouth poll, really big problems.
Well, I mean, one of the things that came out right after it was released, and this was, of course, brought up by the Biden campaign, was the rather infinitesimal sample size.
Yeah. Right, I mean, that's why you never trust one poll.
260 people or something?
Right, and you always have to look at the margin of error. That poll had a margin of error of almost six percentage points, which, could be a 12-point swing between candidates. I tend not to believe that Biden is sliding the way that poll showed that he is sliding. And these polls that are being released this morning seem to be confirming that. They're also making it clear that Kirsten Gillibrand is not going to be on the debate stage next month.
Do you think?
And a few other candidates too, Tulsi Gabbard.
And she also won't be president.
You think so? I don't know. You're really going out on a limb there, Alan.
I am.
We got a lot of letters
on
pretty much every topic we discussed this morning, so we'll go all over the place. Marilyn, talking about Brexit, says, note on British Constitution, the Queen reigns but does not rule. She meets with the Prime Minister in an advisory capacity only and has no role in final decisions. Yep. She is bound, however, to sign her royal assent to any legislation passed by Parliament.
Exactly.
We got this from Polly, who says when Trump was building Trump Tower, he was angry that he had to include the firearms in the hallways and that they had to be red. He had them faux painted marble to blend in with the rest of the faux grandeur. He's about the cheap, nasty, and tacky details.
That's a great letter. I mean, it's a great letter.
We got this from Christopher. I love Rosemary always, but today especially. As a college student in a master's program, I've handed in 3-page papers with more than one source and longer with even more sources. It's ridiculous that in the real world, everyone jumps to conclusions based on one fact, one source, which may or may not be credible or true. If college students need due diligence in their writing, then actual professionals need to be held to an even higher standard of due diligence and truthfulness. I'm tired of reading on both sides of the news that it's inaccurate, screwed up, and sometimes made up.
That was a nice letter. I thought he was going to congratulate you for having a drink before you showed up to class.
I was thinking he loves me more. I'm going to drink every program.
Let me take the con on this one. Suppose the New York Times is doing a story, Rosemary, and group, and they find a non-impeachable source who for the first time comes and says, okay, I've been on the inside of this all along. Here it is, and offers proof. Testimony that it happened. There are times I think you're going to take one person. John Dean, you may mention all of them, but
yes, that is a given, Alan. That if you have like in this case, Trump or one of the other Trump family members who actually turned in the tax forms, if they're his source. Yes, I would run the story, but I don't believe it.
See, but that's dangerous, though, because then you're allowing people to lie to you, and then they can go ahead and later and say that the story is false. It's really dangerous, always really dangerous.
I was going to add one thing, Chris, that if you have someone that unimpeachable, you can always get a supplementary source to say, yeah, this part of it at least is true. You rarely have to ever go with one source. So you're right about that.
Yeah, you make a point, Chris, because I'm still not sure, based on what you and others have and Bob has read about the background of Deutsche Bank, that they're not playing everybody to begin with. That's a possibility.
That's certainly the history.
Yeah.
And I just realized what the Pips felt like, because we're now Rosemary in the group.
Oh, that's cute. Oh, I love that.
You're dating yourself. You're
like,
I'm
sorry. What about the new name of the show?
I'm sorry. What? The Pips. Yes, that has a ring to
the Pips.
It.
That happens to be right.
That will not be a Pip.
Shut up, Pip.
Don't Pip me.
And don't do that off.
I just want to just say one thing about that. There's the Suffolk poll out today, and I think the most interesting thing from it was that a majority, 70% of likely voters registered. I don't know, whatever Chris says.
There is a difference.
There. No, I know.
There's a big difference.
Okay, well, let's go.
By the way, I have a correction on that.
Okay, but go ahead.
Let him finish. Yep, please.
They're dreading the election.
They're dreading
the election.
Well, that makes, I mean, yeah, isn't everybody?
Yeah, I think that, but that isn't that, I mean,
it's going to be the ugliest.
They're all saying it's the most important that they've seen in their lifetime, but they're also dreading it.
Yeah, it's going to be painful for the country. It's going to be one of the ugliest elections we've probably ever seen, right? I mean, I don't know. Anyways, the correction is on that Biden poll from Monmouth that was of registered voters. But a lot of Monmouth polls are of likely voters, which makes their polling sometimes different than what you see from other polling.
Okay, wait. That's fair enough. You're forgiven. That's a major switch. So how do you account for how wrong it was, the small sample size of the Monmouth poll?
Who knows? I mean, it could be the way they weighted voters. It could be anything. Yeah. But yeah, it was a small sample size.
I mean, like the Suffolk poll is I think, over 1,000, 1,500 people, which still seems small to me.
It does.
Chris, you are forgiven.
Thank you, Alan. That's all I wanted was your forgiveness.
That was so close.
I can go on with my day.
He's glowing now, Alan.
Bobby says, I never understood why investigating Trump's taxes and his organizations wasn't part of the Mueller investigation. Following the money would seem to be required to uncover any possible Russian influence over Trump. Don Jr.'s statement from years ago about a lot of Trump's assets tied to Russia was glaring and significant, possible Russian money laundering and their connections to Trump properties, his dealings with the oligarchs and their connection to Putin. How could the Mueller investigation been completed without a thorough look at all of this? I have never understood this, says Bobby.
He must have really gotten quite a spanking after he gave that, because it's still quoted to this day. You know, we're getting our money. We can get all the money we need from the Russians, unquote. Unbelievable.
That's not good.
And I agree with the letter writer. I think Bobby makes some really good points that it's I don't understand why it wasn't part of the Mueller investigation.
Mueller was careful not to go into any area that was under investigation by other organizations. So I don't know if that played a role in it. I thought for sure he had the tax forms and was looking at them. Okay. Yeah.
All right, let us talk about Purdue Pharma and the settlements there. This, of course, on the heels of the Johnson & Johnson lawsuit and decision that was handed down on Monday in the state of Oklahoma. Now drug maker Purdue Pharma is negotiating a multi-billion-dollar settlement with lawyers for local and state governments that would resolve about 2,000 lawsuits against the company, which would declare bankruptcy as part of the deal. The Sackler family, which owns the company, would relinquish control and contribute at least $3 billion in personal funds to the settlement, which could total as much as $12 billion, according to three people familiar with the talks who spoke on the condition of anonymity. Leaders of the 2,000 plaintiffs in a consolidated lawsuit pending in federal court are seriously considering the offer, according to one person with knowledge of the negotiations. Another person familiar with the discussion said, quote, I think this is a last effort. If they don't take the deal, Purdue is going to go to bankruptcy very quickly.
Wow.
Yeah, it's incredible. I mean, this opioid... I mean, it's really a scandal. It's a scandal the way that the drug companies push those pills, and they're paying the consequences. But I think the effects of all this are going to be long lasting. I mean, I think this is among the reasons that people have really lost faith in our medical system. They've lost faith in authorities. It's kind of fueling the way people feel about vaccines and that whole issue. Mm-hmm. We may curb the way opioids are dealt, and dealt is probably the right word, because in some cases these companies almost they feel like street dealers, you know.
but the ramifications are going to be around for a long time.
Yeah, my only argument though is that you know it's pennies compared to the millions and billions of dollars of profit that they have,
right.
And it's a cheap way out of a problem that they created, and I think it leaves the rest of us holding the bag on the fact that they're taking their continuing to take profits and live a lifestyle that I really think that it's too short. We're not getting enough back from them for the crimes that they've committed.
I'm sorry, this just in, but the Queen has approved the suspension of the UK Parliament.
Huh. Wow.
God save the Queen.
So much for the
God
Queen.
God save the Queen. Okay. So just wanted to add that to the story. Go on, Rosemary.
Have I missed this, or have any of these settlements or proposed settlements and talks covered what happens going forward? Are they going to distribute less? Are they going to distribute differently? How is the prescribing and the use of opioids going to change in the future? Has that been covered at all? We've been dealing with, as you say, minuscule
separate issue, kind of,
is
because
it?
What we're talking about right now are just court cases that are implicating those who have been found guilty of allowing this horrible drug to be accessed by so many people and created the epidemic to start with. But it's really going to be up to the federal government and state governments to rein in the way these drugs are distributed. And I think that's still a work in progress.
Is it separate? I mean, I'm asking this not to be contrary, but as a point of information, that if yes, we're guilty, we did it, we're going to pay you minuscule amounts, not nearly what they really profited. And there's no regulation, no court regulation of what goes.
Courts are only going to control how the money is distributed that's won in these court cases. Courts can't make legislation.
So it's totally up to the government then to act.
And whatever laws are in place that allow them to do this or not do this are still there until the federal government or the state government changes it.
Wow. You know what I love to do? I love to put myself in the place of the Sackler family and everybody else who's in the kind of position. They're probably horrified at what they're facing here. And so they'll do anything to get out from under it. And this is the way they're doing it.
The other thing we're seeing is that state governments and even just local city governments are starting to calculate the cost to their taxpayers for what damage the opioid epidemic has done, but also what it's going to take to really recover from it and move forward with a healthier community. And the prices they're coming up with are just extraordinary because it's going to take 10, 20, 30 years to recover from this epidemic.
Well, it destroyed whole communities. And Alan, I think you're probably right, but I hope they're more concerned about the human toll that their product and their approach has caused in these communities. I mean, they have destroyed people's lives. They knowingly have destroyed people's lives. And I hate this fact that they're threatening, I apologize for this analogy, but I'm going to use it, that this Epstein approach to we're just going to declare bankruptcy. We're going to go hang ourselves and not be responsible for all of the damage that we did. And that's exactly the way it feels to me, is that you either take this crap deal and you have to deal with all of the trail of wreckage that we knowingly created, or we're just going to declare bankruptcy and it's not our problem.
It could be a little bit of both.
Well, yeah.
But my feeling is, being a cynic and coming from Missouri, my feeling is that they are sitting up there with the laced oilies all around them and saying, this is terrible for us. We have to get out of this one way or the other. And they're doing it. And believe me, they can be bankrupt or anything else. They'll have plenty left over to live the rest
of their lives. Right. And on the face of it, it's certainly a different playbook than Johnson & Johnson, where they're saying, while Purdue Pharma is prepared to defend itself vigorously in the opioid litigation, the company has made clear that it sees little good coming from years of wasteful litigation and appeals. Mm-hmm. The people and communities affected by the opioid crisis need help now. Purdue believes a constructive global resolution is the best path forward, and the company is actively working with the state attorneys general and other plaintiffs to achieve this outcome.
Pass the tea, please.
Whatever the sentiment is behind that, it is certainly very different from what was being said all over the place from Johnson & Johnson.
So as I was reading this morning, one of the thoughts I had, Joe, was
I'd love to know how much pharma got in tax breaks because of the Trump tax plan. I almost wonder if they made more money off of the tax plan than they do with this settlement. It would be
wow,
nice for somebody to sort of dig into those records to see, because I mean, this really has me hot that people can take profit out of a community and leave the wreckage behind for the rest of us to have to pay.
Well, we did see a similar situation with the tobacco companies many, many years ago. I mean, think about all of the hundreds of thousands of people that, you know, made millions and millions and millions off of selling a product that essentially, you know, killed a large portion of our population over time.
And is it not also similar to the foreclosure disaster, where banks and hedge funds and et cetera sold junk bonds, right, and that ruined thousands of lives, and no one's paid a price for that?
I mean, our free market economy here in the United States has a history of allowing big corporations and the wealthy to ultimately get what they want, which is power and money at the expense of other people.
And if you think it's great that Trump has gotten rid of all of the regulations in Washington, this is one of the side effects.
Yeah, this is what deregulation looks like.
This is the face of deregulation, and this is what this is part of the conversation that as a country we really need to have. But don't buy into this line from Washington about how they're making it more efficient for business, because that doesn't mean it's good for you.
These stories are always so weird to read, because you read them about the Sackler family and the possible bankruptcy, and then about the Guggenheim, the Louvre, and the Met all having to take the family's names off and refusing to take any money from them.
But after they have already taken
millions of dollars
from them.
Exactly. Yeah. All right.
We are
out of time. Many thanks to all of you, and we'll be back after this short break.